We were, remember in Revelation 7, we're studying the seal, the sealing of the saints. And how the angels are holding back the winds, and these aren't like winds that we, these aren't like tropical breezes. These are the winds that waste and destroy universes. And the winds are ready. Even back 2,000 years ago, the winds were ready to, and the angel, God said to the angels, hold the winds back until my servants are sealed in their foreheads. Now, the forehead is always symbolic throughout the scriptures of the man's, of how you think, your, the impudence, the will, the mind. And so the forehead, remember we studied where the leprosy of the forehead was the worst kind, because if you had the leprosy of the forehead, you were condemned to be forever alone. You couldn't even be with other lepers. And it had to continue, you had to continue in that state until you knew you were totally leprous from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. Then you were totally clean. And that's the irony of leprosy. They've just found out that cancer, I'm sure somebody else has known it, I just found out that cancer is the cell stops gaining its life from oxygen, and it begins gaining its life from fermentation. And it produces a cell that is incapable of giving. It only takes. And the cell, once it, the cell gets deformed, and once, because of the fermentation, and once the cell is deformed, then it spreads throughout the body, and so it creates cancers all over the system based on, I mean, it's the strangest thing I've ever heard about. The idea that it stops using oxygen and gaining its energy from oxygen, and it gains its energy from fermentation. I mean, there could be no greater picture of what no prophecy is. It's internal fermenting. And so the cancer then becomes incapable of giving, and the cell can only take, and it infects whatever it touches. And that's the same, it's the same kind of thing that leprosy is. Leprosy is this fermenting. It gains its life from not externally giving, but internally prophesying. And this leprosy of the forehead is, it has to be that. When you're leprous in the forehead, you have no idea that you're leprous. You think you're right, everything is cool. You're right and everybody else is wrong. And then you're condemned to be forever alone until you see that you're leprous from the top of the head to the bottom of the foot. Then you're declared clean.
So those that are outside the camp, you know, doing whatever, Are they considered leprous?
Well, again, remember, these are just parables. And so one way of looking at it is leprosy, yeah. Let's read Revelation 7 so we get back on track. After these things, I saw four angels standing in the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. And it tells you which tribes. There's 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes. And that makes up the 144,000. Now, the 144,000, I don't remember if we talked about this or not. What each denomination thinks about them and all that.
I do remember you said something about the 144,000 is the number of white tablets that are on the outside of the Great Pyramid.
How many people are possible in a tribe?
In a tribe?
120?
No, there's 120 that were. No, you're getting parables confused. No, you're getting. According to the Jewish oral law, 120 people were necessary to create a new community. The 144,000, since it's mentioned here and it's mentioned in Revelation 14, has been a subject of great debate throughout all of religious history. And I don't pretend to have the answer, and nobody does. I can just give you what some other people say and what I think it is. Many interpretations, many people say it's impossible to know, and so they ignore it. And so the theology doesn't address it, and that's the same with a whole lot of things in the scriptures. You get one of these guys that's like a priest that says that, well, you just have to take that one by faith, and then you want to smack him in the mouth. So anyway, the Seventh-day Adventists say that it's the number of the Seventh-day Adventists who will be eating the Seder meal on the Sabbath when the Lord comes. And so it's became a great tool, and they don't do the Seder like we do, but it became a great tool to cause the people to be on time and stuff.
Reasonable.
Huh? It's reasonable. Yeah, to the Seder meal, or to the meal for the Seventh-day Adventists celebrate the Sabbath on Saturday. And they have some kind of a celebration, and they believe that those that are participating in that celebration when the Lord comes will be the 144,000. Jehovah's Witnesses say, it is the Jehovah's Witnesses, obviously. I've never heard of a denomination say it wasn't
them. It's the other guy.
It's those whose tithes are paid.
It's
process of elimination.
Yeah. Jehovah's Witnesses say it is them. And it's there to be saved at the end time. They are the observers, or the overcomers, I mean. And each witness strives through good works to be one of them. And so that's why you see the little guys in the bicycles riding in pairs all over. They're Jehovah's Witnesses, and they believe that you become one of the 144,000 by exemplary character, good works, evangelism. And
that,
it's
clearly not us.
Yeah, I'm getting to that. There's another sect called the Flying Roll.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they're like the Karamazov Brothers.
Flying Roll,
how's that? R-O-L-L, the Flying Rolls. The sect called the Flying Roll, they believe the vision belongs to them, and that their blood is to be cleansed, and they will be given immortal life on earth. They will be the immortals.
Why have we never heard of the Flying Roll?
Yeah.
It's very small.
It's a small sect. 144,000.
They only got 139,000.
What is it
they
believe?
The rose?
The flying roll comes from, since we got into this, let's go look at it. Go to Zechariah. See if you can find Zechariah. Then I turned. He's just seen the two witnesses, the two olive trees, etc., etc. Two candlesticks. Then he said, then I turned and lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a flying roll or scroll. And he said unto me, what seest thou? And I answered, I see a flying roll. The length thereof is 20 cubits, and the breadth thereof is 10 cubits. And then said he unto me, This is the curse that goeth forth over the face of the whole earth. Everyone that stealeth shall be cut off as on the side according to it, and everyone that sweareth shall be cut off as on that side according to it. Now, the word says swear, you might as well just say vow. It doesn't mean don't say goddamn. I mean, you got to hear this. Swearing in the scriptures doesn't mean don't curse. It means don't make an oath or a vow. You got that? We forgot this flying roll one.
We ought to maybe mention this to one of our local
people. We're mentioning it to our local people right now.
I was thinking.
And I will bring it forth, saith the Lord of hosts, and it shall enter into the house of the thief and into the house of him that sweareth falsely by my name, and it shall remain in the midst of his house and shall consume it with the timber thereof and the stones thereof. Okay, now you know what the flying roll is. What is the flying roll?
Squirrel.
What is the flying scroll?
Law.
We studied it.
But I
knew
the flying scroll, or the flying roll, is the law, the curse of the law, that's flying throughout time and space. Okay, that's where the idea of the flying roll, the scriptures, where the flying roll comes from. Okay.
So does that mean they're fulfilling the law some way, how, their own way? I mean,
they are another one that believes that they are going to set up the kingdom of God on earth, and that they will be the ones that will be excused from the curse of this flying roll, and they'll be excused by different ceremonies and good works. It's
celestial hall pass.
Jesus doesn't enter
it
and not an equation at all.
Yeah, he does. Just as long as it suits them. Okay? So, I mean, you gotta recognize that we got horsemen running around, we got rolls flying, I mean, we got plagues, we got 97-pound hailstones, we've got an infinite number of parables here, all telling the same story. And this particular sect, they've hung their hat on the flying roll parable, okay? So we don't want to do that. But they believe that they are the 144,000. And they have people all over the world. I mean, they have little groups of the flying roll sect all over the world. I don't think there's any in Dallas. How did I get off on that? Fundamentally, we teach that the 144,000 represent or correspond to the priests that were in the temple. Remember, at the time of Jesus, the temple in Jerusalem had 144,000 priests in it.
Wow.
Do you know that?
No, that's enormous.
At the time of what?
In the Christ. Temple?
The temple held 6 million people.
It was an actual structure, not just like the state. You know?
No, the temple. The temple.
That's the courtyard.
The court of women, the court of the Gentiles. The whole court held 6 million people, if you believe Josephus and the other historians. The priesthood was 144,000. A significant number of that priesthood spent their time in Israel, I mean, going around the nation doing the purification rites and certain of them and other things. But during the times of the feast, all of them came back. So the 144,000, there were 24 courses of priests, and each one of those courses had, you know, significant thousands of priests in it.
Thousands of guys who spent their lives getting bugs out of the firewood.
That's right.
What feast did they come back for all together?
The three pilgrimage feasts. Do you know what those are?
No.
Pentecost.
Passover.
Tabernacles. So now, who believes it's the 12, the priests, 104,000 priests?
I do. Oh. Some believe, like the Baptists primarily believe that, a lot of the Baptists anyway, believe that the they are actually correspond to the tribes of Israel. And that even though the tribes have been lost in antiquity, there's no genealogical records that God knows who they are.
Oh, and at the end, 144,000 Jews will be saved and converted through some miraculous.
Right. And that's what a lot of the Hal Lindsey types believe. That. So my instinct is that there are millions and millions of people in the body of Christ, universally. And the priest, these 144,000, we haven't studied it yet, but each one of those 12 tribes are a parable of an aspect of the mystery. The tribe of Levi is one, the tribe of Saint Simeon is another, the tribe of Judah is another. It's just like everything else. Everything is a parable that we might see, and as we see, we'll be like him. And when we study that, we'll see that each one of these 12, the 12 tribes represent the 12 aspects of the body, but they also represent the 140,000 priests that were in service. Okay? Now let's go look at them. They're also referenced and let's go over to Revelation 14. And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written in their foreheads. And so the seal that this angel is about to seal the foreheads, these guys have the seal, and they have the father's name written in their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven as the voice of many waters and as the voice of a great thunder, and I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps. They could have translated that one much better than that. They sang a new song, and they sung a new song as it were, and they sang as it were a new song before the throne, before the four beasts and the elders. And no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of God. Well, that's a further definition of these 144,000. Now, I don't pretend to know all of those who those were. As I said, I believe they correspond to the same number, we mean, because it was, that's where they got the number. By the way, John's father was in the, he was one of the priests in the temple. It's almost for certain. I mean, and John would have been, had he not been boiled in oil and sent to Patmos, he would have been one of the key priests in the temple. And so his intimacy and knowledge of the temple is obvious when you read Revelation.
The office of the priests, of these 144,000 priests in the temple, their office was to...
Many.
Oh, if that's what you were saying, they all had different...
Right. There were, I mean, the part of it was, as Harry said, a great many of them, there's only for... they all didn't do this all the time. There were many offices that were shared depending on which course it was. The highest courses were like the course of Zechariah, not the prophet, but you remember in Luke where Zechariah, his course, he was the father of John the Baptist, and his course of the priesthood was to be the incense, and God struck him dumb because he didn't believe God while he was in there offering the incense. So that was the high, what was one of the highest orders of the 24 courses, I mean. But another course was literally inspecting the wood to make sure there was no bug in the wood before it was burned in the altar. Another one was the all of the ashes of the red heifer and the purification rites. And, you know, others were cleaning the ashes. Others were carrying water. I mean, it was the whole process of operating. I mean, there's no structure like it on the face of the earth. Okay? Now, let's talk about the sealing. We started What does it mean to be sealed in their foreheads? We started talking about the leprosy last time we met before I went to Greece, and the idea that the leprosy of the forehead was the worst kind, that you were not just a leper, because if you were a leper you could go to a leper colony and be with other lepers, but if your leprosy was of the forehead, you couldn't even go to a leper colony. You were condemned to be forever alone. Now, it's my contention that that's the state of the human race. The human race has been condemned to be forever alone because the leprosy is in the forehead. No matter what efforts you make, no matter what efforts are done, and no matter how many seminars you go to, fundamentally you're forever alone. You never, ever, ever can commune. You can't communicate. You can probably count on two hands, if you're lucky, the number of people that you've even had the slightest ability to communicate with in your life. The idea that, the hope that marriage or a relationship will bring somebody that you can commune with is outside of a body, I don't think it's possible. Because of the leprosy of the forehead and the law of spiritual. I mean, what happens to all of the people where, I won't embarrass the person because they're not here, but one of the people, I had a meeting with the other night, and they're telling me about all the friends they had. And I said, that's just bullshit. If you had all those friends, you'd have been there now. I mean, you don't have any friends, and the image that you have a friend is a lie. Think about it. Do you have the courage to admit it? It's a terrible admission. I can say I've got these good friends in Arizona. Well, the reason I have good friends in Arizona is because they're in Arizona and I'm here. All right?
Yeah.
I mean, all my good friends here are here.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of acquaintances, I know a lot of people, but if they knew me as well as you knew me, they wouldn't have anything to do with me.
Yeah, without a test, there can't be friendship.
And it's easy to deceive yourself in thinking you have a friend, but once the test hits, it usually blows out right away.
There's so much usually.
Yeah.
I really see that now with Renee and stuff, that we don't even talk anymore. Just because if you give someone life and you stop giving them life, then they back off and they walk.
Yeah. It's that. My personality never demanded the illusion for some reason. So I didn't ever worry about whether I had friends or not. But shut up, Harry. I'm going to smack you. What are you laughing at?
I just thought that was really fun.
Why?
I can think of hundreds of reasons why that's funny.
Can you think of a reason why that's funny?
None that I would mention.
Best friend you ever had was Martin Frick.
Son of a bitch.
See?
I mean, you're right. Of anybody that I would call a friend outside of this group of people, I have not had one person in all but 3 years that called me that didn't need something. I mean, that's the only reason I would get a call is, hey, I'm starting this or I'm doing that. Can you help me?
Friendship is a commodity that we think we seek. And so people, and in love, we seek love and all that other horse shit.
Respect.
Dignity. Romance.
What is dignity?
Huh?
I never have figured that out.
Dignity?
I mean, good grief.
Dignity is it's an illusion. I mean, it's the quality ascribed to somebody that you don't know very well. It's somebody that you've made into an idol and you ascribe dignity to that person. Or somebody real old.
Tell you what's sobering. If you ever sit around and go,
Now, why does no one respect me? I don't deserve any.
I've never even thought about asking that question.
I've thought about it. I know nobody gonna respect me.
She thought about no one respects me.
No. I mean, people respect you, but you don't give a shit. It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, it's
what does it mean if you're a respecter of persons?
It means you care what. Since
you do have to respect some people, don't you?
It means you care what they. To be a respecter of persons, from a scriptural standpoint, is that you give more importance to them than you would to another person. So you would esteem someone higher for a reason other than their need. Spiritually, the one that's in the greatest need is the one we should respect the most. But we turn it around and we give respect to somebody that you can benefit by, or that you're afraid of, or I mean, it's like, again, I'll never in my entire life get over this. But when Daryl was sitting in the chair, and he was asking for the respect of the chair, well, I wasn't here, so I don't know the circumstances, but that can't happen. I mean, if the moment you're worried about whether somebody respects you or not, you can guarantee you don't deserve the respect. But again, back to the things of friendship and fellowship and all these other mysteries. The only thing that I can know for a certainty is that whether it's love or fellowship or friendship or respect, the only way you have it is if you give it. If you seek it, you cannot gain it. And so, I mean, that's the gospel in a nutshell.
It was in the giving.
And whatever the need is, you give it. I mean, Tilton's got that right. If you need money, give it, but that's not the issue. The issue is, it's in the things that your heart requires. And your heart does require respect and honor and love and friendship. But you can't ever find it by seeking it. You can only find it by giving it. And that sounds like an impossible thing. I mean, how can I give something I don't have? Well, you have it because Christ has it. And the act of giving it opens that window. So it comes flooding out. But the lot, you see, of this, the seal, the human race has the wrong seal in the forehead. The seal that the human race has is leprosy. We have to exchange that to the seal. That we want this angel to seal it. And that's what we got to try to figure out what that is. Okay? Where are we? Let's go to Ezekiel 9. Chapter 9, we've just finished chapter 8 where it's about digging and seeing the vision and going inward, and so now this is the vision of the slaughter. He cried also in mine ear with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near. Now this is the angel that has taken Ezekiel, and he brought him through and showed him the abominations that were going on in the temple. He showed them the women that were weeping sewing things for Tammuz, weeping for Tammuz. And then he says, he cried in mine ear and also with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lieth toward the north, and every man a slaughter weapon in his hand. And one man among them was clothed with linen, with a writer's inkhorn by his side, and they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. And the glory of God, of the God of Israel, was gone up from the cherub, whereupon he was to the threshold of the house. And he called to the man clothed with linen, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And the Lord said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem. Now, you got to understand that from God's standpoint, only Jerusalem exists. I mean, there's nothing else. That's the overriding reality. And in this, in Jerusalem, the New Jerusalem, there is the Holy of Holies, there is the Holy Place, there's the Court of Priests, there's the Court of Israel, there's the Court of Women. And if we see later in Ezekiel, he says, there's also the Court of Gentiles, and then there's the East Gate, which is the dump. So all of that is what the world is. And he's going to say pretty soon, don't measure anything except the Court of Women. Everything outside of the Court of Women is the dump. Now, he's saying now, within the Court of Israel, and from the Court of Women up to the Holy Place, go through and do the following. Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of them, of the men that sigh and that cry for all of the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. In other words, who are in a state of repentance. Go to the, and to the others, he said in mine hearing, go you after him through the city and smite. Let not your eye spare, neither have ye pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women. But come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they begin at the ancient men which were before the house. And he said unto them, defile the house, fill the courts with the slain, go ye forth. And they went forth and slew in the city. And it came to pass while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face and cried and said, ah, Lord God, will thou destroy all the residue of Israel in thy pouring out of thy fury upon Jerusalem? And then said he unto me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceeding great, and the land is full of blood, and the city full of perverseness. For they say, the Lord hath forsaken the earth, and the Lord seeth not. And as for me also, mine eyes shall not spare, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense their way upon their head. And behold, the man clothed with linen, which had the inkhorn by his side, reported the matter, saying, I have done as thou hast commanded me. Now, what did he do? The man with the inkhorn went through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the forehead of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. Now, this is the same. This man with the inkhorn is the same angel in Revelation that is in, that is telling the other angels to hold back the winds until I finish setting the mark, until I finish sealing the foreheads. You got it? Let's go see another view of it, Revelation 13. Verse 15. Now we're going to talk here about another mark. And the mark here is another view of the whore's forehead, or the leprosy of the forehead. Okay? Now watch. And this beast had power to give life unto the image of the beast, or the being, and the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. The better translation is that it is the number of man. and his number is 666. The Antichrist, the number is 666. Everybody's running around looking for the Antichrist. All I have to do is look in the mirror. The number of man. Now you see, the beast is marking the forehead with the same mark, and that mark is the mark of leprosy. And it's the opposite of the mark which this angel in Ezekiel 9 is marking. Now what, let's go, let's see what happens if you got the mark.
I'm sorry, what did you say about Ezekiel 9?
What we just read with the inkhorn, he's marking, the mark he's marking is the Tau, T-A-W, T-A-U. And it's the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and it's the form of a cross. Okay? Now, what happens, we'll have to read all of 14 to make sense of this. And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood in the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000 having his father's name written in their foreheads. And again, the difference. This one has the mark of the beast, the other has the father's name. The father's name is in the form of a cross. And I heard a voice from heaven as the voice of many waters and as the voice of a great thunder. And I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps, and they sang as it were a new song before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders. And no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of God. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell in the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come. Now, you've got to understand something. In the New Jerusalem, in eternity, there is no time. And so the fall of Adam, when he ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the fall of Babylon, the crucifixion of Christ, and the judgment day of God are all the same day. You understand that? You don't understand. Trust me in that one. Saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains and waters of waters. And there followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Tell me something else besides cause and effect. The wrath of her fornication is cause and effect. You understand that? And all people drink of that. There isn't a being on the face of the earth, a man on the face of the earth, that hasn't drunk of the cup of the wrath of her fornication, which is cause and effect. It's the ultimate enemy of grace. If I do this, this will happen. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast and his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand. We just got through seeing that if you didn't receive this mark, you couldn't buy or sell, right? Now God, through this angel, is saying, if any man worship the beast in his image and receive the mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. Which cup is that? It's the cup of jealousy. If you've committed fornication, wait, have we studied that in here? Your belly swells up and you die. Your thigh rots. If any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. How is he tormented in fire and brimstone? Because fire and brimstone are what's causing the dump. I mean, it's what's burning in the dump. God says you had value, now you don't have value. Now you're going to the dump. Why don't you have value anymore? Because the test is over. As long as the time existed, the test was necessary, so there had to be all these whores running around to test the bride. Cause and effect was necessary in order to test to see whether the very elect could be deceived. But now time is over. Now, going into the dump, the brimstone.
Yeah, it used to be a threat. You're going to go to hell if... But it's just the way it is.
It's the way it is. They receive the mark in their forehead. The mark. The whore's mark. What is the whore's forehead? The whore's forehead is the forehead of cause and effect. You know the thing that deadens a relationship more than anything else? It's true just in the simplest relationship. It's cause and effect.
You think, oh, I won't say that because
I thought. Or,
if I did this then,
or because you did that, I'm going to do this.
Or you did that so you don't look.
Yeah, or any of the infinite number of, I mean, it's the, it's... Yeah, or that kind of an attitude.
Yeah.
Oh,
and the smoke of their torment ascendeth up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night, who worship the beast in his image, and whosoever receiveth the mark of his name. Can you see that whoever lives in cause and effect is worshiping the beast? Is that beginning to dawn on you?
I have a question. Why can't they, if they have the mark, why can't they buy and sell? Or if they have a towel, they can't buy or sell? Understand.
They can't buy or sell unless they have the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast is the whore's forehead. Having the whore's forehead means you're worshiping Bel. Remember Bel and the dragon?
Huh? There.
Huh?
So you have currency there.
Yeah.
I think you have currency there.
Well, you do for the limited period of time. As long as time exists, there's currency. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments. And this is in juxtaposition to these that have the beast. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works do follow them. Instead of lead them. That's enough for that. I don't feel like talking anymore.
When we were reading this stuff about the six men with a slaughter weapon in their hand, the stuff, I sort of re-experienced how scared I was many years ago when I went to see The Exorcist. The idea that this is reality. What I do and what everybody I think does is try and, it's like Scarlett O'Hara, you know, it's like, I'll think about that tomorrow. I'll just continue on. Knowing that you're hurtling toward that brick wall to do your life, but if you don't hit it today, then you know, just sort of re-experienced just how scared I really got.
Well, when you talk about cause and effect, I feel like I'm real clear on the spiritual cause and effect, but I get real hung up on the physical cause and effect. And you're saying that it's all spiritual, and God does it all anyway, and so there really is no physical cause and effect?
There's the appearance of cause and effect, but it's only within limited parameters. You can prove anything if your outlook is sufficiently limited. God says, expand your horizons to no time, and in no time there's no cause and effect. I mean, so if you sit around and look, then, yeah, it looks like there's cause and effect. You know, because you can make these little... You can prove these little things as long as your outlook is when you define, when you have the luxury of defining your own parameters, you can prove anything.
Yeah.
but the exhortation of God is expand the tent ropes to the edge of time. In that arena, then there is no cause and effect.
What's a miracle? And all of a miracle is, there's no big deal. All the miracle is that what appears to be the restrictions of cause and effect and time and all that, just God goes, get out of here. If you really believed cause and effect, you'd have to go get a gun and kill yourself. Because you've had it. Think about the logical conclusion of cause and effect.
Yeah, but people don't do that. They limit the limitation so that the cause and effect is...
They never look past that.
Well, but we have to. I mean, we all do it. We.
I'm just going to bring it in where you can deal with it. That's why I'm not freak out.
Yeah.
If you let it get big, it'll freak you out.
The thing I love about most people, when they discuss cause and effect and the appearance of it, I'm not saying you're doing this, but it's done because they want to be able to have the illusion they're in control. And so the idea of being in control is quickly dispelled if you really want to be in control. And what God would do is he would remove the motor functions so that your conscious mind would have to be in, there would be no more division between conscious and subconscious, and your conscious mind would have to do the work of the subconscious. And you would have to keep your heart beating at the right rate. You'd have to keep the enzymes going, the hormones balanced, the respiration going, all of a billion nerve endings and pulses moving so that you could, I mean, God gave us, I don't believe there was a conscious and a subconscious in Adam. When Adam fell, then the subconscious occurred, because otherwise man would have died because he couldn't have been in control. And so the idea that you have the so-called autonomic functions or motor functions of your body that are operating, and they operate like 99% of the things that you do, and if they didn't do that automatically, you would die. But then there's this remaining 10% of the stuff, and you think you're in control. And it's the biggest illusion in the universe. You think you have free will. You know, tell your heart you have free will.
That's why prophecy is so hard.
Yeah, because you think you're in control.
You can't control the other person's reaction, so you don't want to say anything.
Right.
So really, that's a proof that you don't have control.
Yeah, that's that thing about Adam and Eve were naked and they were not ashamed.
These little, I wish we'd do a bunch of them, but my favorite cartoon is Abraham is looking up to God and he says, "You want me to cut off the head of my what?"
Now that's obedience.
Or Moses is standing up on the mountaintop with the two tables of the law and he says, "What about funding?"
Did you see today's? I don't know if it was the Far Side or what it was, but this guy in a robe is standing in front of the bathroom mirror, and he's like this from the back, you know, and his hair is like this, and it says, "Moses parts his hair."
But control is the big illusion. And it's that's why the Antichrist, it says, he sets himself up in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Doesn't show anybody else.
Yeah, well, they have a test.
But he shows himself that he is God. Or herself. You don't believe me. Go there. 2 Thessalonians. Whenever I say something like that, I look around and people say, "You made that up." But they're not afraid. They're afraid to say it.
That's not fair.
2 Thessalonians. Chapter 2, verse 4. Well, verse 3, "Let no man deceive you." Is everybody there? You got it? So you can see it written down? Mm-hmm. "Let no man deceive you. by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God.
That's amazing. I even have it underlined in this, you know.
I'm in control here.
What verse?
I'm in control. Wow.
Second Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4.
I get this feeling, while you're reading that, I got that feeling, the same feeling of like, when I told you I saw that image where it was like instant fear, but this, you know, at the same time I was laughing. You know, so it's like, there's like a joy of almost like, oh, you know, you're going to be, you're exposed. You're almost
reading the next verse.
You know, but at the same time, there's just like, there's that fear.
Yeah, but read the next verse now.
Okay. Remember ye not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things.
Keep going.
And now ye know that what withholdeth that he might be revealed in his time.
Keep going.
For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let, until he be taken out of the way.
Keep going.
And then shall that wicked one, or the wicked, that wicked be revealed, and the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming.
Okay, that's it. He shall destroy. Consume or destroy?
He shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming.
Okay. He shall consume and destroy in you, as Christ speaks in
prophecy
you.
Destroy.
Prophecy destroys them.
Is that for sword?
Yes, an incredibly evil being is pathetic and has already lost.
Yeah.
And when spit out, just goes away. It's like Dracula disappearing in the sun. It's melting.
So the more you shut yourself up, the more life you give them.
That's right. And the more you think about tomorrow, the more life you give them. The more you talk to yourself, the more you're giving the Antichrist a hand job.
Yeah, I think we've covered that one.
When Hitler would stand and speak to Germany, he didn't stand there and say, I'm. He said,
you're.
So he was giving them...
He was stroking the Antichrist in the people and not revealing what was in him.
It'd be so easy to do that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm lucky I'm a believer. I mean,
we all have our tests. Yours is, he could have been Hitler.
Well, I know.
You
mean could
have been. Yeah, well.
Nice talk.
Evil Irish.
The first fruits are really good out of state.
You know, it's really wild because the longer you stay here, the more you can picture these things in your head. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody sitting in it, you can see yourself.
Yeah.
Whereas before you saw this other image. Yeah. Now I can really... feel myself sitting there and I could
be caught up in it.
Yeah, I could actually experience it.
Mischief and superfluity and nothingness.
It was pretty amazing too when we read that part in Ezekiel about how this is slaughtering. I mean, it's just
without mercy.
Children, you know, just whatever. Yeah, without mercy.
Without, unless the mark is there.
I thought it was the devil I was afraid of.
Yeah,
that's why the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. People quote that all the time, but they don't have any idea what it means. Okay, take a big guy.